Today on the Out of Chicago podcast, we'll be talking photojournalism, the future of photography, and igniting your photography passion with our good friend, wedding photographer, photojournalist, Canon Explorer of Light, Bob Davis. Welcome to season 4 of the Out of Chicago podcast. I'm Chris Smith, and this is where we talk about everything Chicago photography, whether you're a Chicago photographer and you're local or you're coming for the weekend to visit, this is the show for you. Today we bring on one of my favorite photographers, and that's Bob Davis. But before we get into the interview, I want to talk about our next big event, and that is the Out of Chicago Summer Conference. This summer is the 4th annual Out of Chicago Photography Conference, and it's June 23rd through the 25th, downtown Chicago, and it's even bigger and better than the last 3 years. Every year we make changes, and every year it gets even better, and we have even more exciting photographers there. So this year we've got some of our old favorites like Rick Salmon, Valerie Jardin, Steve Simon, Ann Belmont, James Mayer, Marie-Lane Yeo, Derek Story, Levi Sim, Angie McMonagle, Jim Walninski. They're teaching some new classes. They're doing new photo walks. They're going to be doing panel discussions, and it's a ton of fun. We also have some new photographers like landscape photographer Ian Plant, legend Bill Fortney, John Kosmopoulos, the architecture photographer, Josh Cripps with his million subscribers on YouTube. If you don't follow Josh Cripps, follow him. And Ugo Che is coming from across the Atlantic Ocean. He's somewhere in, he's in Italy. Yeah, Ugo Che, of course he is. So he's coming from Italy. And so we've got new photographers, we've got old photographers. It's going to be a great time. I hope you can join us. I want to tell you about one new thing that we're doing this year that we've never done before. And we did it before at the winter conference back in February, and we're going to do it now for the summer conference for the first time, and that is the Out of Chicago Shootout. And the idea behind the shootout is that there's going to be a set time on Saturday where for 2 hours, every room is going to be available to you with different things, different subjects to shoot. So we'll have models. We'll have Ann Belmont and her flowers. Bill Fortney is bringing all of his macro subjects that people love to shoot. And we're going to have stuff set up throughout. I know that Vanelli will be there. If you know Vanelli, he'll be shooting with Hunt's Photo. And they're going to have a model, and they're going to have a whole studio set up. You'll get to try out all the equipment right there. And so it's going to be a ton of fun. It goes along with what we have always done in the past, which is that you can borrow lenses, cameras, equipment from all the camera manufacturers that will be there. You can take them out on the streets, but for the shootout, you can try those things out right there, and they'll have things set up for you to shoot right there. We're going to have a huge setup from Lens Baby. They'll have all of their lenses there, and Belmont and the rest of the Lens Baby staff will be helping out there, and they'll be helping people get great images and talk about why would you use this Lens Baby lens over this one. And you get to try them all out right there, borrow them, give it a shot, and give them right back. And actually, Hunt's will be there as well. Gary Farber and Hunt's Photo will be there. And if you like it, you'll have a chance to get a really good deal on it right then. I'm always suspicious of these great deals, but it turns out that when Gary is there with Hunt's, he's given specials by the camera manufacturers that are not available anywhere else. And so you can go online, go to all these other websites and check the prices. And the price that you'll get at the conference is much better than you could get anywhere else. And last year I ended up buying a Lens Baby 56 millimeter velvet. If you're interested in joining us, we'll give you a special code to get $100 off of your registration, and that would be OOC, as in Out of Chicago, OOC podcast. So go to register at outofchicago.com. You'll see a link there to the summer registration, and use the code OOC podcast. You'll get $100 off your registration, and you're going to have one of the best photography weekends of your entire life. So join us this summer in Chicago. So let's get into our interview with Bob Davis. He was our keynote speaker at the 2015 Summer Conference, and he's a Canon Explorer of Light. He's known for his wedding photography, but before that, for a long time, he was a photojournalist. He worked for the Chicago Sun-Times, so he's kind of been all around, and he's one of the most passionate photographers that I know. He's come to our winter conference the last 2 years, and he's just popping into all the different classes and checking them out and participating, and no one even knows who he is, wandering in and out, getting amazing images. People see the back of their camera like, wow, this guy seems like he knows what he's doing, and that's because he is really one of the best photographers in the world and one of the best teachers as well. So let's talk about photojournalism. We'll talk a little wedding photography, the future of photography, and igniting your photography passion. So here we go with Bob Davis. Before we begin, I want to apologize. My audio quality on this interview is terrible. I don't know. I wasn't using my fancy mic. I was just yelling at the computer. And Bob sounds good. He was using his fancy mic. So, yeah, I don't know. Next time will be better. But thankfully, in this one, Bob does most of the talking, and he's the one you want to hear anyway. So, my bad.
All right. I'm here with Bob Davis, Canon Explorer of Light. He was our keynote speaker at the 2015 Out of Chicago Summer Conference. One of our good friends. He's always hanging out with us as well. So thank you very much for joining us, Bob.
Thanks, Chris, for having me. You know, I always love hanging out at conferences and things, whether I'm sharing or learning. You know, you got to be green and growing, and you can always learn something from somebody.
You know, that was one of my favorite things. I mean, you came to our winter conference the last 2 years. You're just like, hey, I'm just going to come hang out, blend in. It looked like he was one of the attendees, and he's getting amazing shots. So, you know, he's a wedding and portrait photographer. That's his profession, and he's getting great shots. And everyone's like, huh, that guy seems pretty good. And I don't know how he does it and sneak between people, and they don't realize it's the Bob Davis they're shooting right behind him. So I love it.
Yeah, no, I'm just a visual artist and creative person like everybody else. And, you know, while we get paid and we're blessed to do what we love, weddings and portraits and photography, you gotta go completely in the opposite direction and do things for no money at all to feed your creative passion, to stay invigorated. You know, you gotta keep that rookie spirit while tempering your pro's eye. And if you don't, you're going to burn out. And eventually, if it becomes a job, then I don't want to do it.
Yeah, I love hearing that. I hear so many photographers that are professionals, and they go, you know what, the last thing I want to do is bring like a camera on my vacation or shoot any other time. I've got enough photography, but I just love it that you do it because you love to shoot.
Oh, I do. Love to shoot and love to learn more. You know, boy, you have to forgive me. I had a couple of great people in the winter. The guy who was shooting low light with
Julio Shorio had the models going and the fog machine.
And the fog machine going. And that was a blast because, A, I don't normally work with models. I work with real people. And it was fun to not have to use a flash to light something because I'm on the hook to get a good image. But to actually play with really low light and those colored LEDs. And then the other lady you had with found objects.
Sherry Miller.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was outstanding. I loved her class because we are surrounded by beauty and art, right? And it's so much fun. So since I've done her class, when I take the dog out for the walk, whether I have my camera or my iPhone, I'm looking at things and looking at beauty, and it puts you in a better state of mind. And then the next thing you know, when you're on a shoot where you're getting paid, all of a sudden I'm looking at wedding details in a different way.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, yeah. And I think that's true with all sorts of photography. You learn one thing for one type of photography, you can apply it to lots of different things. And that's a really interesting thought, what Sherry Miller does, and apply that to a wedding, to objects in a wedding. That is really cool. You know, let's talk a little bit about your background here, because you started as a photojournalist originally, right? I mean, like so many photographers. Tell us a little bit about your background.
Definitely. Photojournalism is, boy, been my passion. I grew up around my dad, who always had some type of camera. If it was a Kodak pocket camera or a Super 8 movie camera, he just always had some camera around. He was kind of like our family documentarian, even Polaroids and stuff. So I grew up playing with that. But I wanted to be an artist, you know, cartoons and drawing and sketching. I love that. I was pursuing that and going to high school for it. And my counselor was like, well, you've got a lot of art class. Have you thought about photography? I'm like, no, not at all. And yes, this is a cliche. You're going to hear this from anybody who's done it for as long as I have. you get in the dark room, you develop that first roll of film and you're making a print and you see that image come up in the red light and you're just hooked, that magic. I don't know how people do it now because digital, it's like so instant, you know, where I still miss a bit of that craft and the mystery of, you don't see what you're shooting because there's no LCD screen, you know, mm-hmm. and then here it comes up and like, oh, I got it. And it's even more rewarding.
So yeah, but you didn't have any Instagram filters or anything like nothing. That to play with. Come on.
Nothing. Nothing at all. If you wanted something to have a tone to it, you'd put selenium chemical in there and you'd turn your black and white blue, or you can make it brown or a little green. Yeah.
No, it's a selenium slide.
A little bit more chemistry was involved. But my photo advisor is like, hey, you're pretty good at this. You ought to try out the school newspaper. And I did. And we happened to have some good sports teams at the time. And the local newspaper wanted to cover it, but they didn't always have enough staff. So they started buying my photos from the games. Like, whoa, I could get paid to do this? Really? And I'm like, yeah. So that hooked me. I was done. And I grew up reading the Chicago Sun-Times. So I immediately said, I want to work there. And I started clipping out photos that were my favorite. And they ended up being quite a few of them because they're such storytelling, impactful moments by someone who then became my mentor, John H. White. And he worked at the Chicago Daily News when that folded in 1978. The Sun-Times were in the same building and they just were absorbed into the Chicago Sun-Times. So I grew up reading that. And then I ended up having the opportunity to learn from him at Columbia College. And then we worked together for 15 years.
Wow.
So that was an amazing journey.
So you're shooting at the Sun-Times basically 15 years.
Yes.
Out on assignment, whatever they needed. Is that right? What was your thing?
Your day could be, you call up, you start at 10 in the morning, you call out at 9, say, hey, this is Bob. What do you got for me today? And they're like, you know, it's a nice day. Go get a weather shot. You know, so it's just wild art. Show people enjoying the beautiful weather. Then you're there. Then all of a sudden you're back then it was a radio or a pager. Of course, then it evolved to cell phones. And next thing you know, they're like, okay, there's a fire here or a shooting there. Get on it. And then you're there doing that. And they're like, okay, drop that film off. Leave a caption. You know, the president's going to be speaking at the Palmer House at 4:00. That's your next assignment. So you never knew what you were doing hour by hour, day by day. It was very fluid that way. And it was great because it forced you to think on your feet. You know, and we had an old-time chief photographer. He grew up in the 4x5 days, Bob Katalik. And he gave me my first assignment at the Sun-Times. And he said, kid, here's your assignment. Come back with a good picture or don't come back at all. We can't publish an excuse. You know, and he was serious. And I've embraced that my entire career, even still to this day. When I get commissioned and to shoot an engagement session, a portrait, a wedding, every picture I bring that enthusiasm to and that mindset to. You know, in wedding and portraits, we see a lot of photographers that will go to a wedding day and they may produce 10 amazing, outstanding images, right? And that's great. But we're shooting for a book. You know, their book has got to have 100, 120 images in it. So you got to bring it to every picture you take. You can't say, oh, I don't like shooting the processional, recessional. I'm just going to get what I get. No, you got to bring that purpose and passion to that. Couples are on a journey when they're planning their day and every detail tells a story about the dream wedding they want to have. Don't just catalog them, light them, put them in a location to make them part of the story. You know, so I've embraced that ever since the beginning of my photojournalism days.
Yeah, I like that. A lot of people, you know, do the documentary wedding. A lot of people just pose everything, but you're making sure it looks good, but you're documenting it at the same time. You're putting it all together, it sounds like.
If you're going to do it really well, I mean, it's not a side job. It's not something to do for some extra money. Really, it's not. It's the hardest thing you're going to do because you're going to wear many different hats. You're going to put on the documentary hat, or you could call it photojournalism. Photojournalism, hey, wedding photographers, it's not tilting the horizon and making it black and white. That's not photojournalism.
Oh, man.
The essence of photojournalism is capturing the peak emotion in the moment, right? That's photojournalism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no tilts, no just because it's black and white, nothing like that. Now, you're also going to wear a commercial photographer hat when you're photographing the shoes or the rings, you know, bring it into some nice light, watch your backgrounds, you know, really light it, do well. Then you're going to be a portrait artist because you got to get the family portraits because it's a significant event in someone's life and people gather, you know, usually at births, weddings, funerals, milestone moments in people's lives. So you got to be good at that. You got to hold their attention. They're not models. So you got to give them coaching and reassuring and lighting. You know, whether you use, I like to use speed lights only because they're convenient. And I don't work with an assistant. I have a second photographer that works with us. So this started way back when I was a photojournalist. You know, sure, we had great people that worked in our lab. So you could walk in with your film or later on digital, you drop off your CF card. The lab guys could work it up. So Joe Earhart was a great lab person at the Chicago Sun-Times. And so I started getting creative with Vivitar, small flashes. And I'm using gels. So I love this cross-lighting technique, meaning, okay, we're in a tungsten environment. My main light's going to be gelled for tungsten. But I'm going to use my daylight speed light off to the side, give a little bit of blue rim light. And I come back and Joe's like, Bob, I don't know what you did with that image, but I'm telling you, can you get the color right next time? You know how hard it was to get that blue out of the frame? You know, because poor Joe didn't know what my intention was, you know? So he got it all color correct and he's using masks to hold back the one area and bring in the other. So yeah, it's those skill set and that foundation that I learned there that I've embraced my entire career.
And like you said, thinking on your feet. I mean, if you could do it when the president's walking through or one of those other events, you're going to be able to pull that off at a wedding. So
yeah, I don't know why a lot of photographers get tunnel vision, meaning like, okay, I'm a wildlife photographer. Well, okay, if you shoot wildlife really, really well, you could shoot sports really, really well because it's putting yourself in a position and you're waiting for the moment to happen and then it happens, boom. You know, it's baseball could be incredibly boring, but you got to be ready because when they dive at second base or they make a flying leap catch in the outfield, you know, you could have been sitting there for three innings picking your nose. If you're not on and ready, you've missed the storytelling image of that game for the day.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about that.
The work together.
Right. Well, we'll talk about it like a little bit later about all your wildlife shooting and that as well, too. So I'm excited to hear about that.
Wildlife and landscape, being out in nature at this point in my career is very spiritual for me. It really is. It's that thing that feeds your soul and is very invigorating. And, you know, but it's the same skill set that you need for whatever you're going to do. If it's a, if it's just photographing your kids, if you're, I don't know, whatever, the skills are interconnected. You know, you don't have to think like, okay, I just do macro. Well, a macro lens could be a portrait lens too.
Mm-hmm.
Still throw the background out of focus the same way.
Yeah. And whatever skills you learn photographing flowers or whatever, you could use that again, like for a wedding, for details at a wedding. So at all.
Or for, you know, speaking on photojournalism, I mean, it's the delivery of news is evolving and changing and there's always going to be a need for it. So you need to still have that skill set.
Right. You know, let's talk a little bit about that. So, So you're obviously not at the Sun-Times now. Talk about that part of the story and kind of where you see like photojournalism going for photographers that still want to shoot that type of thing and how they might be able to make a living doing that, if that's even possible.
It is possible. Anything is possible, you know, if you set your mind to it, if you set a direction and goals, you know, kind of what you and I, we were talking offline about The Secret, you know, that's been an impactful book for us because it gets you to live your life more with a purpose instead of what happens to you. So if you want to go to Northwestern and take their photojournalism program, or Columbia College and take their photojournalism program, you're going to have to start thinking outside the box of what they're teaching you. And what I mean by that is you're going to be an entrepreneur, because those staff positions at magazines and newspapers are evaporating, because our means of getting news is evolving rapidly with electronic media, with the internet, with smartphones, tablets, and all of that. So you're going to have to learn the skills and the craft of photography, but also learn business and marketing so that you could develop relationships with news outlets. We were speaking on the Huffington Post offline. Let's just use that as an example. And if you want them to be your client, or CNN.com, right? If you want them to be your client, they still buy video, they still buy still photographs, they still buy that stuff, but you have to convince them, why should we use you? What's different about you, right? So relationship building is even more important. And yes, you can make a career in photojournalism, but it looks different. You know, it's not like when I went to Columbia College and I was like, my goal was to work at the Chicago Sun-Times, and I did. You know, just a little bit shy of 15 years. And I kind of started seeing the writing on the wall that things were evolving. And it got to the point where certain editors there didn't care about quality. It's just like, just fill the hole in the paper. And I'm like, man, that's not for me. My name goes underneath that picture. You know, I was taught, John White taught me, sign your work with excellence. You're responsible, you know, for that space. So there was a lot of friction there. And finally, I just had enough one day. And so I left in 2004 and never looked back. But I left with a purpose. You know, I was going to take that skill set and I was going to work with a startup company. And I dove into wedding and portraits full time, because that's the ultimate picture story to tell someone's story throughout the day. I just chose to go in a different direction because I got burned out on the newspaper industry. Magazines, I've shot for Time, Newsweek, Sports Illustrated, People. You know, we still get events because we're lucky enough to shoot some pretty high profile people for weddings. So we do deliver on deadline to that. But it's different. You know, that's not my full-time gig, shooting editorial, because again, it's evolving. And when you're going to do that type of work, you're going to have to front a lot of your expenses. So you're going to have to save some money. If you're going to do destination and travel to get someplace for a story, you're going to have to front all them expenses. You're going to have to bill them, and you're going to have to wait, because almost every editorial photographer I still hear from, it's 90, 120 days before you get paid.
Yeah. But bottom line is you kind of got to do this stuff yourself. There's so many people that are photographers and they say, well, the jobs aren't out there. They're expecting someone to give it to them, but you need to show people
you
can do it.
No, you're exactly right. So look around. There's more multimedia used now than ever. We're surrounded by more imagery than at any other point in history. You know, so it's there. It's just figuring out your path to monetize it for you.
Right. And I believe that there are more photographers now making money with photography than there were 20 years ago, but they're doing it maybe because they have a great blog or they have a great YouTube channel. Ways that were not possible before.
But of course. And that's going to keep changing too, right? Mm-hmm. That's going to keep evolving. And if you stay up with current technologies and means for that way and carving your path, it really is limitless. Someone's going to come up with a new way to deliver images or a new channel that hasn't been thought of yet, and they're going to make a living at it, or a significant living at it, you know.
Right.
It's there.
Yeah. Now, this is slightly different, but it has to do with money. What's your advice? I mean, you and I both see all these people that come in and they're like you were saying earlier, they're like IT people or they're graphic designers. And they're like, yeah, I started doing photography because it's a lot of fun. And then all of a sudden people are asking them to shoot their wedding or whatever. Like, what's your advice to those people?
Definitely. Well, what it is, I think people more and more, you get your day job and that's paying your bills, but you're feeling a little bit empty. So you start pursuing some passion. Some people it's painting, some people it's digital artistry in the computer, a lot of people it's photography. And you pursue that passion. And the next thing you know, people are loving what you're creating and they're saying, hey, can you make a few photos for me? And you start off doing it just because you love doing it. And then the next thing you know, someone's offering a few bucks, right, to a portrait, or, hey, come and photograph my cousin's wedding, whatever. It's realizing you do have a value though too. You might give it away the first few times, but then start understanding what you're doing, your artistry, your eye. If someone is asking you to come and they're going to offer you a few bucks, realize there is value in that, right? So, because if you keep giving it away, it's hard then to start charging anything. So there's great resources for figuring out pricing, because that's really hard. What am I worth? Where do I start? You know, so you have Professional Photographers of America. They're a great resource if you want to start building a business of it and learning, what is my time worth? What is my camera worth? You know, the one thing I hear is someone who's just getting into wedding photography, for example, they'll say, oh my God, I made $1,200 on Saturday. I don't make that much money in my real job. I'm like, okay, let's back this up a little bit, right?
Yeah.
A, did you do anything to get that client? Oh yeah, I made 5 phone calls. Well, how much time did you spend? Okay, what do you pay yourself an hour? All right. Now, you're going to edit that wedding? Sure, you shot, let's say, 2,000 images. How long is it going to take you to edit that? And then I hear people, oh, 40 hours. I'm all week editing this thing. I'm going crazy. Like, okay, now what do you pay yourself? Back that out. What did that camera cost you? What about your car insurance? What about your internet connection? All those things get rolled into what you're doing. And then you realize, wow, I only made $150. You know, when you back out everything, then you have to make it a realization that, A, are you doing it just for fun and you're making money? Or are you thinking about this as a real business,
mm-hmm.
right? How do you want it to be?
Right. Yeah. And since sometimes people get into that and then they realize this wasn't something I'm passionate about. And
correct.
Yeah.
Because then now it's a job.
Yeah. And now it's a job. Exactly. So
that's definitely why I do things outside of what our main business is, and that's wedding and portraits. I do landscape and wildlife, and, you know, we teach, Dawn and I teach, because we have this knowledge and experience and we believe in paying it forward. Once a month this year, I started what we call the lighting lab. So me and a few of my colleagues get together once a month and we throw out topics and then we push each other to do things creatively. I just posted one on Facebook from images we did, and, you know, just experimenting and playing around and what you could do. And it's fun. You push each other creatively.
I love this idea. So you guys actually get together at the same location and come up with a theme, or just people bring different ideas?
Yep. We'll start kicking around an idea for a theme. You know, we've done reflections. We've done, you know, street photography. We've done, the last couple have been studio stuff and pushing small light modifiers, then studio using bigger light modifiers and different techniques. Shooting through stuff has been a theme, you know, framing objects.
Yeah.
You know, and those, we've then created our own, we're using a Smug Mug to create a private gallery for us that actually holds the image with all the metadata. Because if you're ever on a shoot and you're having a brain fart, you're like, oh, we did this. How would I do that? You pull up the image, and there's the metadata.
Yeah. Right?
Oh, we got those lights to really be tiny and big and out of focus because we did 2.8. When we were at F8, everything was too much in focus,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's now your creative reference point.
And that's what I love about you, is that you're constantly trying to learn new stuff. I love it.
You gotta be green and growing, other than being ripe on the vine and dying. I don't want to be a raisin.
So if someone wanted to create their own type of group like that with some of their friends, how many people do you recommend for something like that?
You know, it ebbs and flows. So I believe 3 is a great place to start, because 2 people, you know, sometimes one's a little bit more stronger of a personality, and then you're always kind of doing one person.
One and an assistant. Yeah.
But 3, someone's always pushing the other one, and that allows the other person to kick in, and you know what I mean? It gets this nice blend going.
Yeah. You know what? I find the same thing, sorry to interrupt you, but I found the same thing teaching high school, that you put, you know, I taught science. You put two kids in a lab group and it's like one kind of takes over, but you put three, they all play off each other.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, just start and again, get that purpose going, meaning don't just show up and say, we're sitting around the coffee, what are we going to do today? You know, then you spend all day doing that. Define a topic ahead of time, stick to the topic, but be like a palm tree and bend and ebb and flow as the day goes, you know? And that's where that play, like when we were kids, you play and you have fun and you learn.
Right. If you want to grow, you got to do things that are different. You can't just keep doing the same thing over and over again.
Shatter your comfort zone.
Very good. So let's talk about some of these new things you're doing. You've been going to Africa. You've been shooting wildlife. You and Don are teaching these classes. Where do you want to begin here?
We are. Yeah. We've got sticking with the wedding and portraits. You know, one of the things we believe in is helping photographers not only build their portfolios, but grow their business. So we have a dream team, literally a dream team, the best of the best in Chicago for event designers, wedding planners, stylists, clothing, everything, and models, coming up on April 12th and 13th. So the 12th is an actual shoot day. The 13th is going to be all workflow. And then they're going to leave on the 13th with a finished portfolio. So they're going to have 5 matted prints, but they're going to have a matte box that has 10. So they're responsible to add the other 5. It's going to be a high-end, beautifully designed stuff that maybe not all wedding photographers get exposed to, but it's the level that I play in, the really high end. And it's stunning and it's beautiful, but you got to capture those beautiful detail shots. And then you want to learn how to develop relationships with those vendors because they are your business partners. Right. And that's part of what we're going to be going through. And that's April 12th and 13th. And anybody wants to find out that or information, we have a safari coming up to Botswana, Africa in October. All that information is at davisworkshops.com. So davisworkshops.com.
And we'll put a link in the show notes for the podcast here.
Yeah, so appreciate it.
Oh, of course.
So, yeah, we also have one last thing.
Keep going.
We did it as an experiment, a month-long, in-depth lighting class at ProCam. Mm-hmm. So we met every Tuesday for 3 hours a night, and I would give a homework assignment. But what was different is everybody had to make a print. And the feedback I got from the class was they learned a lot about their craft of photography from seeing the print, because everything looks great on a computer screen. But when you actually output it, you actually see where your highlights are getting lost, where you could use more information in the shadow area, and also color for both black and white tones and color, how it actually reproduces. So that was a great class. We have a second class coming up, and it's going to meet every Tuesday in May, but it's limited to 20 people. Same way with our Dream Team stylized wedding workshop, that's limited to 10 people, and we only have 3 spots left for that.
Yeah. So back to that just real quick. So if someone's coming to this Dream Team shoot, there's going to be models there. They're going to be in some of the best dresses. They're going to be dressed.
Correct. Great decor, great venue.
Flowers. Yep. I mean, I don't know. Exactly. Yeah, I'm thinking flowers, all this stuff. Designed
ceremony space, designed head table, beautiful flatware, linens, cake. And then we're going to actually transition from the decor space to the Radisson Blue and do location portraits of the couple. So you learn how to light on location. And we're going to share with them how to use your light quickly, that it doesn't always need to be complicated to get the best possible images that both the couple are going to want and what's important to your vendor partners. Again, sharing. So when we usually, it takes about 5 weeks for us to deliver our images to the bride and groom. Well, Dawn has helped us create, Dawn is my wife and my partner, and she's created processes that we put into place so that we immediately also service our vendors. So we know all the vendors involved with the wedding. Dawn creates both a high res and a web ready. We create a vendor sharing agreement And once they agree to our vendor sharing agreement, we give them access to a Dropbox where they could download these photos and immediately begin using them instead of having to hound us, because everybody wants to put their best foot forward and showcase their latest work. And by doing that, it's really helped us grow our business.
Yeah, the bottom line is that you got to have the skills, you got to be able to light, you got to be able to have to get the great shots, but to really make it a business, there's so much more to it than that.
And all the definitely don't hold your pictures hostage. If you're planning on being in the wedding industry, you're all collectively working to produce the best possible photographs for not only the bride and groom, but all the vendors involved.
Yeah. So just real quick for the gearheads out there. So what are like the speed lights you use? How many do you use? What Canon equipment are you using? Just throw it out there. People want to know.
All right. So I've been doing this a long time, so I've evolved my gear over time, but I have 9 600 EXRTs.
Wow.
So speed lights. And I like light because I never... And think of it as the umbrella of light. Not that I use flash for everything, but there's times when you're out and about where there's no sparkle. If we had to go outside and shoot today, it's gray and it's rainy, mm-hmm. It's crappy. I got to shoot because my clients are in town. Well, I got to bring the light, right? I got to make it sparkle.
You're going to make it look good.
Yeah, it can make it look like late afternoon sunlight. You know, you learn how to control your lights and how to color them and things of that nature. So I could do more with more lights, to borrow a quote from my colleague, Stephen Eastwood, meaning I could do more with 4 or 5 speed lights than I can with 1 500 watt second strobe, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just can. And it's easier, being that I don't have an assistant, to set them up and move them about than, again, just travel with strobes. But on the topic with strobes, I can't tell you how excited and thrilled I am to be using the Photix Indra 500 LC, because it's a 500 watt second strobe that is compliant or works within the Canon RT system. So it gives you all the same functionality as the speed light, seamless communication, but with 500 watt seconds of power. So I've been using that for my formal portraits and using my speed lights as accent light for the environment or rim light on people. And it's just something I've always wanted to have, that seamless integration. I have used the Profoto B1s. I have 2 of my own. But then when I bring a speed light in from the side, I lose functionality, meaning no longer high-speed sync, no longer TTL. I can't raise or lower the power up or down or turn that group on or off. Where with this strobe, it's seamless, it's small, it's both battery-operated and AC. It's like the coolest thing that just allows more creative freedom. That's all these tools do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a little behind the game on this stuff. How do you control it all? Is it in the camera now, or is it on a flash that's on your camera?
Sure. So with the Canon speed light system, the radio control is built in.
And this is what you taught. I'm sorry. This is what you taught when you came to our thing.
Well, you were busy.
I got part of it. Yeah, I was also busy. Yes, go ahead.
Instead of using a third-party device as an interpreter, if you're in line of sight, this is all built in. So you have the radio transmission and receiver built into the speed light itself. And then they also make a speed light transmitter, which is just the transmitter without a flash attached to it. So you can communicate with your off-camera lights and tell them to be manual, TTL, on, off, adjust their exposure, all right from the device. Or through a menu in the camera. You have options either way.
Okay, right. Okay. All right. That's what I was wondering. And then real quick, cameras, lenses, what do you typically take?
Yep. I'm a two-body shooter, so I always have one with either a wide zoom or a wide-angle lens if I'm in prime mode or zoom mode, and one with a telephoto. So pretty much 24 to 70, 16 to 35, 70 to 200, 100 macro. That's your go-to. You need the macro for the detail shots. But then, you know, I'll break into primes later on in the evening when I don't need to have to be stationary. The zoom is great because you can be stationary and adjust your field of view, because I don't want to be a part of the wedding.
Mm-hmm.
But later in the evening, after the formalities are done, then I'll switch to like a 24 prime and, you know, an 85-1.2 prime and go to that.
You'd probably be a little more creative then as well. Whereas earlier, like if you miss that moment, you missed it. So
right. I don't want to be stuck with an 85 looking and someone's emotionally reacting halfway across the room with the 200.
Right.
I got it.
Right. You got the right direction on there too. That was good.
Yeah. Well, muscle memory, manual focus.
Exactly. That's awesome. All right. So let's talk a little bit about your latest passion. You're going to Africa. You said you're, is the main thing you're going for landscapes, wildlife, both? Tell us why is it that the photojournalist that then reinvented himself as one of the top wedding photographers in the world is now a wildlife and landscape photographer?
Well, it's all visual artistry, and certain aspects of it all fall into photojournalism, meaning capture an impactful moment. I love animals. I love nature and wildlife. So if I had to go in an order, it would be animals first, then we're going to do some landscape, you know, but it's about being in their environment. And I'm excited. We're going to this camp in Mahachu in Botswana, and it has a blind at a watering hole. So you're actually in this blind that's at water level. So you see elephants and lions and all these different animals coming, but you're not looking up. I'm sorry, you're not looking down at them or anything. You're right at eye level, and you look at, and there's an elephant like right there outside of this blind. You know, so that's the most exciting part. This will be our fifth time to Africa. And just being in the wild, it's very spiritual to see them in their environment and how beautiful animals are. And you know, I get all the ethical stuff of, you know, we do eat animals and things of that nature. Sorry, getting the hook. Meetings today. But it's just an amazing place to be. So it's two safaris a day. It's one in the morning at sunrise, because that's when animals are most active, and one in the evening at sunset. And then in between, we'll do workshops.
That sounds great. You're going to be helping people all along the whole way.
And having a great time. I mean, your food is great. It's glamping. It really is. You're in wonderful tents that have clawfoot tubs, and the food is outstanding. You know, it's our favorite thing to do.
Wow. Well, that sounds awesome. So you got the Dream Team shoot. You got the Africa workshop. You said that's in October 19th through the 30th, I think you told me.
Yep.
We're going to put links to all of that.
Just davisworkshops.com, and they could find out, and they could sign up for our newsletter there and keep up with things.
And I think Dawn is calling you.
We got to go to a meeting.
You have a real job. You got to go meetings and all that. So thank you so much for taking all this time to hang out
with us. Chris, I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you so much, Bob.
Thanks. Have a great day.
We'll have all the things that Bob has coming up, and some of them in just the next day or two. We'll have links to all those in the show notes. And if you are interested in signing up for our Out of Chicago Summer Conference, don't forget to use the code OOCPODCAST. You'll get $100 off, and you'll be signed up, and you'll get all your classes right now. There are still spots available in some of the very best classes, so get on it right now, and we'll see you this summer. So thanks for joining us for season 4 of the Out of Chicago podcast. We've got a bunch of other great ones lined up, and I think you're really going to enjoy. So if you're not subscribed to the podcast, please do that. And if you have not gone to iTunes and given us a nice little review there, we appreciate it. So talk to you soon. I'm Chris Smith, and we'll see you next time.